got it. Okay. Here we go. It's a Monday. We do love to hear from you on a Monday. Well, actually, every single day. You write to us at mynorthwest.com. You text as well. Come on into the State Roof text line at 98973. If you have a dog, please send that to Jacob with a picture as well. A brief description of what he or she likes. Please don't have the dog dictate it. It's annoying. Okay. Dive into the news! You're right. You're okay fielding all the dog pictures, aren't you, Jacob?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind looking at some dogs.
Okay, good.
I don't know if our text platform allows for it, but you could send them to us on Twitter or Facebook.
Okay. Did you know that, Tom? I'm trying to find a dog, and like six listeners have already, you know, tried to pan their old dogs on me.
I know. I've already advised you against getting a dog. I don't know what more I can do, John.
Like, he's really nice. We've been putting off hip surgery. I'm like, oh, okay. Oh, he's like, have you been putting it off? I'm more than welcome to pay for a hip surgery for your dog. Oh, my gosh. Let's get Hannah Scott in here. Hannah! All right. So, according to our news, that apparently it's the people on the right are going to start rioting. Is that what's going to be happening? I know over the weekend we've been told that the police are getting ready, and there was stuff in Bellevue. What do you want to start with? The Bellevue?
Sure.
Okay. So what did they find hidden along the parade route or the protest route?
All kinds of stuff. And actually, so to set this up, there was for several days before Saturday, there was all over social media on the protest kind of social media channels. The people who are usually protesting in Seattle over the weekend said, you know what? We haven't been paying enough attention to Bellevue. Those are the people that are kind of big capitalists. We need to go and spread our message over there. So I had talked to the Bellevue PD early in the week and said, you guys are watching this. They said, yeah, we're doing that. So as soon as that started, I think the protesters gathered at the park downtown at around 6, and there was probably 75, 100 or so of them, and then they were marching around downtown. But almost immediately, the mayor put out this civil emergency alert. She banned all the weapons, like the, you know, sticks and rocks and fireworks and things like you usually see in the Seattle protests. So she did that, and the protesters kept marching around, and it was, for the most part, pretty peaceful. And here's Police Chief Steve Milette says that he stood behind the decision, actually, for the civil emergency.
One of the businesses here found propane tanks stuffed in the bushes. So all of this combined, plus their history in Seattle, that led us to believe that they were getting ready to launch an attack.
So they also found, they're like sticks almost as long as bats and stuff that were kind of hidden behind there. So that's why he said, and he, you know, he said it was a win. In the end, it was pretty peaceful. I think one person got arrested for driving on a suspended license, probably part of their car brigade that they have. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you know, largely peaceful, and he thought successful. So that
election
was a good thing.
Coming. All of the regional law enforcement agencies have been in communication with each other. We are making preparations and, again, hoping for the best and concerned about, you know, widespread civil unrest as a result.
So he's talking about next week, which now we're learning that pretty much, I think everyone across the country, as we know, is preparing in large cities for election protests, whether it's on the right or the left. I think there's concern that no matter who wins, that there might be something, if the results aren't particularly clear, if it's not a widespread margin kind of a thing. And the FBI here in Seattle told the Seattle Times that they are watching. There's a lot of chatter, but nothing that's a real specific necessarily threat going on. And I think I played for you guys last week. The governor said he was doing something. We've got about 300 Washington National Guard who are going through training, who will be ready to be out and deal with any civil unrest on election night or the days that follow, depending on, you know, how it all plays out. Chief Milette says anybody coming to his city wanting to cause problems?
If you're coming here to destroy and to engage in criminal behavior, you're going to be held accountable, and that includes going to jail.
How many people, by the way, just when the riots or whatever that was occurring, where they broke into the Bellevue Square and stole stuff and basically looted Nordstrom and all the stores, I wonder how many of those people got arrested. I stood there and watched it, and the cops stood there and watched it. And
a lot of them did, actually.
Did they catch them? Okay, good.
Yeah, I'll try to find it for you before the end of the show, but I had a list of them somewhere because they were actively being prosecuted, several of them.
Oh, good, good. All right.
Back then. So beyond that, as far as any unrest and protests for elections coverage, we saw a little bit of that in Woodinville over the weekend as well. So again, for the most part, pretty mellow over in Bellevue. They had the civil emergency. But in Woodinville, there was a pro-Trump protest, like a rally. It was fairly small. And in the middle of that, somebody went and I guess it was some younger teenager types who were more to the left came up and somebody threw a liquid in a guy wearing a MAGA hat's face. Here's what that sounded like.
Hey, gun. He's pulling. What's your name? What's your name? I'm calling the police. It's water. It's water, you snowflake. It's water.
Okay.
So he pulled a gun, and that was cut on video. I think somebody tweeted it to Jacob and I on Saturday, and then that went viral. This morning I checked, it had like, I don't know, 3.5 million views. And the King County Sheriff's Office is investigating, looking for the guy who pulled the gun. But I think that the guy was saying during the actual thing, he was face burned, and they're trying to figure out what happened. But okay.
Was it water? Because he's saying there was some sort of mixture and the police are investigating what were the contents of the bucket or whatever the person threw on the guy that was. So let me get this straight. So they're marching around. They got their Trump signs. And then some of these sad misfits show up and they don't like that they've got Trump signs. So they start screaming and flipping them off. And then somebody throws something in this guy's face, right?
Yeah, but I believe the person who threw that took off like as soon as the guy pulled the gun. So yeah. It was the other teenagers that were around who were, calling him Snowflake and all of that.
Oh.
And screaming, but the point is that that's the kind of tension that they're worried about going on to like some massive large scale protest and counter protest. There's concern about widespread protests like all across the nation that are coordinated, so they're watching all of that kind of chatter.
Yeah,
so I am curious. I can't personally, so this will be a week before the election. I can't imagine that it's going to be large scale. And it sounds like, based on what I read in the Seattle Times, they don't expect it to be. They just want to be ready if indeed it comes. Is that your sense that it's not? There's no specific threat from either the militias on the right or the protesters on the left. That it's just they want to be ready. But don't you think the odds are that happening not that high?
I would say, first of all, yes, you're right, that they definitely just want to be ready. There is a lot of talk about this kind of thing, though, and it's been, it's a volatile year. You've got some folks on the right who get very, very, very passionate and very, very loud. And, if we were to see President Trump lose or some sort of controversy over the election, maybe not election night, but if there was some sort of controversy, I could see possibly some kind of civil unrest like that. Hard to say. They're really unpredictable at this point. So I think, they're just trying to be ready.
Look at 2016. He wins. People go into the streets, start to burn, and then the day he's inaugurated, they're screaming and yelling and breaking things and setting things on fire. I had seen that Black Lives Matter out of Sacramento was trying to raise enough money to have 10 people go and take a firearms safety training class. And then I read further into the thing, and basically what they said is, if Biden wins and Trump contests the victory, there will be riots. They will protest. They're organizing people, trying to get thousands and thousands of people to get ready to go out into the streets and do something if Trump contests the results of the thing. So this is the heckler's veto. We get a chance to see it live and in person. To me, it always seems like the left shows up, runs around breaking things, setting things on fire, and then a bunch of knuckleheads on the right show up, and they don't like the fact that the left's out there, so then there's the confrontation that goes on.
And it's the extreme on both sides, which is what we saw
absolutely,
a lot of in Portland.
Absolutely, absolutely, in Portland. But here it is in Woodinville. People have got some Trump flags, and then some teenagers think, well, I'm going to go over there and scream and yell at them. Because why? Because I guess intolerance is a virtue. Yeah, intolerance is a virtue. And by having a MAGA hat, it's okay to punch a Nazi, or it's okay to punch somebody who doesn't believe the same sort of stuff you believe, which the First Amendment doesn't apply to everybody, certainly not to capitalists.
That's the problem, right? That's the problem that we're living in right now, is that nobody is willing to listen to the other side. Free speech goes the way of I don't know what. It's just gone.
Right. So the guy's a complete moron for pulling out a gun. What is he going to do? Pull the gun out and shoot somebody for throwing something into his face? Probably not the best move for him, but certainly it does make the person who throws things in people's faces think twice. Is this person just nutty enough to pull out a gun and shoot me? Are you willing to lose your life because you don't like Donald Trump?
Yeah.
Or like
it. I would think most people wouldn't want to say yes to that. But, I mean, you know, that's happened. We've seen multiple cases over the years, not necessarily on this topic, but where somebody's thrown acid on somebody's face or other things like that. So I get that response. I think you're putting yourself at risk to do that. And just the tension, though, it's, you know, it's in the middle of Woodinville, in the middle of the day. It wasn't like the typical protest atmosphere. It was a rally. And people just behaving badly.
Right, but Hannah, if these teenage whatever they were show up, and if they hadn't thrown things in the guy's face and screamed and yelled at them, would this have made the news and been shared 3 million times?
Nope. I mean, I wouldn't think so.
So you can stand there on a street corner with a Trump flag, or you can drive through the streets of New York City, Jews for Trump, and then you can get your cars egged, you can get stuff thrown at you, rocks thrown at your cars, because basically it's this. Okay. If you're for Trump, you're a Nazi. If you're for Trump, you're a horrible person, and it's okay for me to key your car, punch you in the face, shoot you, hit you over the head with something, because it really is, it is a life and death situation. Donald Trump must be gone, and I will do everything I can to stop any individual I can that disagrees with me. And that, I believe, is where the left is coming from.
I think far radical left absolutely is. But
not even that. You don't need to be that radical. You don't need to be that radical.
John, yeah. I think you're hyperbolizing a bit. Based on the Seattle Times account, there were two small clusters of young anti-Trump demonstrators opposite the intersection. And according to one eyewitness, said the person who threw water was not with those two groups of teenagers. So we might be.
Was it water, Tom?
Jumping to conclusions.
The guy got hit in the face with water? Did he hit in the face with water?
Well, they say they don't know. It was with
So they don't know.
With some fluid, but it was reported. I think it was water, is this one account. But the FBI or somebody, the police, have the bucket and they can look at it. But they said it looked like there might have been some mud in the.
I don't care if it's.
Because the guy said his face was burning. He said his face hurt.
Yeah, that's okay.
Do you understand how people from the left feel it's okay to go around punching people, right?
Well, I think that you are trying to make political hay out of it. So I would guess I would just resist your characterization that anybody who does anything like this is that way.
Are you aware of the number of protests that are occurring almost every single day across the country where people that have a MAGA hat or have a Trump sign or in some way supporting Trump have physical violence upon them?
Well,
are you aware of what people, if you're wearing a MAGA hat and you walk down the street, someone feels it's okay to scream at you or throw something at you, right? You understand Tom? You get that.
I don't know how many times that happens.
Okay.
But the thing is, I never hear you talk about these militias that are behind Aaron Bundy. And they have organizations, 26,000 people in 15 states. I mean, that sounds more scary to me than a random teenager who throws some possibly water. I haven't heard any conclusion. All I know is based on what the Seattle Times article says. So
right.
I'm sure.
And I have a little bit more information, but the guy who threw it did take off. You're right. And so it was unclear to me whether he was with those teenagers. The teenagers are the ones screaming on the tape that I played for you guys.
Right.
But, you know, at the same time, to what John is saying, we've had other people who come. There was a guy who just got arrested for pulling a gun on the person, the artist, right, over in Renton, making the mural that he thought was a Black Lives Matter mural. So it happens both directions.
Uh-huh.
It does.
I agree. Here's my point, is that I believe the left feels as if they need to do what they need to do in order to stop Donald Trump. And I think that the right, the crazies on the right, that they go off and protest. It's like, I want to be able to have my free speech. And the people on the left, no, your speech is violence. And therefore, your words hurt people. So then we're allowed to hurt you because you're hurting us with your thoughts.
And I think that there's this extreme on both the far right and the far left where they use violence as their weapon in these protests instead of just, you know, speech. I think that both sides have that.
But how many rights are out, people from the right are going out almost every single night in the streets of Seattle, setting things on fire, throwing things at police officers, and assaulting police officers with bats?
Yeah, not as many. We saw more of that in Portland than we saw here.
Right, just checking. Okay. Hannah, by the way, do you, on a scale of one, what's wrong, Tom? You don't think that's true?
No, I think it's so slanted, that's all.
Oh,
I get your side.
Me?
You see?
No, Hannah. You're straight down the middle. No, you got the referee shirt on.
That's the toughest spot to be.
You're fine right there. Yeah.
Anyway. We'll just
move
on. What
were you
going to
ask me, John?
I was going to ask you about the possibility of riots. I've looked at Chicago, New York, Atlanta, Philadelphia, L.A., that all the police are telling store owners, we're probably not going to be able to help you. There's not much we can do for you. So board things up and get ready and just try to hang on as best you possibly can.
I think you see everybody board up here in Seattle for sure. I think it's very likely we see some demonstrations on the street, you know, widespread, big, like we saw right after George Floyd. I don't know. It depends on how the election results come out, I think.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Hannah. Appreciate it.
You bet.
All right. Here she goes. She's got the referee shirt on, don't you think, Tom?
Yes, and she has to use it when she's talking to you.
That's right, Tom, because I see things as like, oh, my gosh, the left is doing horrible things, but the right is absolutely innocent. I'm not saying that. There's kooky guys on the Boogaloo Boys, all those other guys.
That's right. The ones that are charged with the most serious stuff tend to be the ones on the right. I just never hear you talk about those, your fear of those.
Yep. But how about the 19-year-old that had all the guns and the $500,000+ who's going to go kill Biden?
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah. Let's just check in with, by the way, he turned out to be, I think, a Bernie guy.
Oh, gee, I wonder why you brought it up.
Oh, well, I assumed that most people assumed he was a Trump guy, right? You know, I need that time. I find that to be so comforting at this time of the day. Knowing that I can reach out and someone's going to be fighting for me. Yeah, I really, I like that. Okay. Muckleshoot Casino. Yeah, Muckleshoot Casino, they're fighting for you to have a good time. And they know you will every time you go to Muckleshoot Casino. We got to get Rachel Bell in here. I love this story.
Rachel Bell, get in here.
I'm here, baby.
Oh, I see you, baby.
I can smell you a mile away.
I smell. I smell great conversation.
Ooh,
that's what I smell.
I smell content. Hot content. HC.
That's a switch up.
Yeah. It's a very sensual thing that John and I are doing. We smell the news. We taste the news. We hear the news.
I chew it up, but you know what? I don't swallow it. What I do is I chew it up. I get all the juices out of it spit it into a Sprite can. All right. So, Arbel, this story in The Atlantic was long, and Tom and I both read it.
All the way to the
end. Okay, good.
The end was more interesting than the beginning, wouldn't you say?
Well, that's always the case of every great story.
That's how they trick you. They put the good stuff at the end where most people won't read it.
Get to it, girl.
Okay. All right. So this story in The Atlantic, as you said, is entitled, What If Friendship, Not Marriage, Was at the Center of Life? And then the little subheadline is, Our Boyfriends, Our Significant Others, and Our Husbands Are Supposed to Be Number One. Our World is Backwards. So they start out telling a story of two 31-year-old friends, Cammy and Kate, who have gone beyond the usual boundaries of friendship. After one of them got divorced and the other became a single mom, they kind of became a couple without the romance. You know, the one without children helped care for the one who did have kids. She would help pick up the child at school and babysit for him. And basically, they were partners without the romance, like I said. But what they find in society that people don't understand that. They want to know if they're secretly dating or if they're relatives, and they just say, no, we're just really, really good friends. They're beyond good friends. There's not really a term for it. And that's kind of where this article starts is, why isn't there a name for people who do this kind of thing? I would argue it's because it's not very common. But the argument is, do you really need to have a romantic partner? Can you just live your life with a really good friend and take on all of those roles that a partner would take on, minus the sex? So the reason that I thought that the end of the article was more interesting than the beginning gave a bunch of examples of people who do this. The end kind of talked about the history of female friendships and the evolution of marriage in America. So it said between the 18th to the 20th, to the early 20th centuries, there was something between women called romantic friendships that was really, really common. This was before women were mostly educated, before they would work. So men were not... They weren't threatened. They weren't threatened by these friendships because they knew that the women still needed them for the money and they would still be married to them. But then as women became educated and started working, these, quote, romantic friendships lost their innocence. People assumed they were sleeping together on the side, and it became taboo to have these kinds of friendships where you would hold hands walking down the street with your friend. So the timeline of marriage is this. This comes from Northwestern University. They said from the colonial period in the U.S. to about 1850, a marriage was about money. It was about economics and survival. The second period from about 1850 to 1965, that's when people started saying you should love your partner. And then after 1965 came the self-expressive marriage, which is basically what we're still in now, where people expect everything from their partner. So emotional support, sexual satisfaction, shared hobbies, intellectual stimulation, co-parenting. And you hear this all the time, you know, you can't get everything from one person, but that's kind of what we look for nowadays. And all of this leading up to the fact that can you have a partnership, that word partnership, with someone if there isn't sex? And according to a journalist, Rebecca Traister, she says, do two people have to have regular sexual contact and be driven by physical desire in order to be a couple? Must they bring each other regular mutual sexual satisfaction? By those measures, many heterosexual marriages don't qualify. It's a lot of info.
Yeah.
But I think marriage, it's so interesting.
Yeah.
If you, when you look at how marriage has changed over the years, and you just think, why were those things? What were the external forces that were at play for the internal forces of someone's heart needing to connect to another human being? I remember one time talking to Desmond Morris, name dropper, Tom.
if I knew who that was, I would be like, wow.
He wrote The Naked Ape. He was a sociologist and a psychiatrist and all sorts of stuff. And he basically compared human beings to animals. And I said to him one time, why did my parents get divorced after 23 years? He goes, the better question is, why were your parents married for 24 years? And he basically looks at us as animals. He said, there's no reason for two people to stay together for 25 years or 30 years or 40 years because they themselves evolve and change. Marriage itself is a social construct that we put in place in order to raise the children. You were walking and talking and could have taken care of yourself by the age of 12. Your parents didn't need to be together anymore.
I think that beyond love, there is something to being in a partnership, and that is it's much cheaper. You can, you know, have a bigger house. It's true, though. It's true.
Yeah.
Like, you're supposed to put your resources together. I think that's part of it. And you do need help. It's like, it's nice to have someone to take care of you when you're sick, when your car breaks down. All those things, I think, are why people will stay in a relationship. And also, it's like, I mean, I had this in my family. It's like, well, if we get divorced, I'll have to live in an apartment. But right now I get to live in a house. I mean, you tend to get more if you're with more people, which you could get the same thing if you had roommates.
Mm.
If that's what you were after.
But what makes people continue to strive, Tom, do you think, towards that idea of, you know, rom-com or I don't know
yeah.
what the idea of the romanticized view of what a marriage is supposed to be.
Well, I agree with both of you that this article is so rich in possibilities and ideas. Paige and I have been talking about this all weekend because of these kinds of things. And I think that this idea of a marriage having to do with romantic desire, they were like polar opposites for decades. Also, the fact that you can express love for somebody of the same sex and it not be seen as homosexual was true all the way through the, through up until like 1800s. That was just accepted, which makes a lot of sense in the big popular musical Hamilton right now, there's a lot of discussion about whether Hamilton was sexually involved with one of these guys that, you know, fought with him. They were best of friends because they use this kind of flowery language. Reading this article makes me think, no, that is just the kind of language. Men were not afraid of saying, you know, I love you, or, you know, love without meaning romanticism, without any kind of sexual desire. And to me, the most fascinating thing about the whole thing, I agree, is near the end, but it's now, only now, this is the post the 1950s, so post 1800 and post 1950s, only now do we see our sexual desire as an integral part of our personhood. That right now, because I think what civilization has repressed homosexual feelings for so long, now it's if you're gay, that's the most important thing, and you identify as gay, and you should have gay marriage and all of this, and they say that isn't itself, you know, not necessarily the best thing if you want to create a relationship which depends on something more than just everything in one basket. I found that fascinating, that we expect our wives and our husbands to be able to fulfill every one of our needs, and that might be unrealistic, and hence how many breakups or divorces there are.
Yeah. Great. So does this make you want to get married or not get married?
I want to get married. And but if not you got because of this article.
But if you got married, because you, the great thing about having a, being, you know, leading a single life is that you have lots of richer friendships than most married people, I suspect, have. But can you imagine being married but have put a friendship first?
No, and that's what this was talking about. I think that if you establish that, I think whatever works for everyone is fine. You know, it doesn't work when you just follow societal norms. If within your relationship you agree you're going to put someone else first, that's fine. If my partner, you know, said, I'm not going to ever vacation with you, I'm only going to go with my friend, that would be painful for me.
Problematic,
but some people don't mind that. So it's like whatever works for you. I hope that people who have a really, really close friend are having a hard time finding a partner, don't let society get in the way of them living together, helping out, you know, around that, like just being partners in life. I don't think anybody would be judgmental of that.
Hey, Jacob, do me a favor. Can you send Tracy Taylor this story? Have her read. Tracy, I'd love for you to read it, and then, because there's so much here, as
homework.
Tom said. Like, yeah, a little homework. And a couple weeks from now, get in on this, because to hear your point of view as a married woman, to hear Rachel's point of view, I think there's a lot really to this story. So it's from The Atlantic. It's called What If Friendship, Not Marriage, Was the Center of Life? So maybe Jake.
Yeah, I'll look into it.
I recommend people who do book groups to read this article and do a little article group around it. Because, I mean, we could talk about this for hours.
Yep.
I know, but we can't.
We got traffic.
Yeah, thank you, Rachel Bell. Bye, Rachel.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All righty.
Bucky's Auto Service Centers, you know they got 16 locations. Why not go to every single one of them? Think of it like a trick-or-treat thing. Take your car in there, push your car in there, have the people at Bucky's Auto Service Centers make sure your car's running right. They've been doing it for 50 years, so they know what they're doing. That COVID stuff, Tom, just put a big kibosh on my Thanksgiving plans. Ryan and I, we're going to fly to Philadelphia to see my brother. He called me on Sunday, and he said, you know, don't come.
So if he hadn't told you that he didn't want you coming, you would have gone.
We had tickets. We were ready to go. We were flying there and going to be there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
So does that mean that he's taking COVID-19 more seriously than you, or is there something else?
He just said, you know, I can't afford. He goes, it's not going to kill me, but I can't afford to get sick for 14 days, because he runs a law firm and he's got all these people who work for him. And he goes, I just, it's not worth the risk. I'm not worth the risk? He goes, no, you're not worth the risk. I mean, how many times do I have to tell you that? Oh, right. By the way, did you see video of them sucking those killer murder hornets, Asian murder hornets, out of those trees, Tom?
No, you know, it's funny. I read a bunch of articles about it, but I still haven't gotten around to seeing it. I love the idea of it.
Yeah. Apparently, it was very successful. Listen in.
We found one and we took it out. We're all pretty happy here. So just start off with that.
Wow. I felt like I was there. What a story.
That's good. Let's start at the beginning.
That guy can weave a web, can he? Woo!
No. Those are spiders, John.
Did they get a lot of them?
Uh-huh. Once hornets stopped coming out of the nest and into our vacuum device, we decided to finish it off by basically asphyxiating the rest of them by introducing carbon dioxide gas into the nest chamber. All told, we were able to vacuum up 85 specimens. Dr. Chris Looney had netted 13 specimens the Friday before while observing the nest, and that gave us a total of 98 specimens that we collected during our vacuum extraction.
I like how he calls it a vacuum device. It's a vacuum. You don't have to put a device in there to make it seem more sophisticated.
What I don't know, so does that mean they're still alive? Because they said they killed the other ones. But did they, when they say they extract those 98, are they they're alive now and they can study them alive?
I don't know if he sucked them out to make them live and then decided to gas the rest. I don't know. Jacob?
Yeah, okay.
Jacob?
No, my understanding is that there were no survivors, but that they don't seem worried about studying them anymore.
Yeah.
They did a lot of tests on the ones that they had captured previously.
Yeah, what are you going to do with 98 really? Of them, Tom?
He was bragging about getting
vacuum device.
Well, you hang your device up on a wall and put a frame around it.
And then he called it a nest chamber. It's the nest. All right. You gassed them in the nest, and you got the rest of them in your big shop vac. But congratulations, and so sorry to see them all go. Man, when you watch video of those nasty-looking hornets, it's like, what purpose do they serve? They're like mosquitoes. Why do we need them? Has anybody even bothered to talk about why we needed those murder hornets in the first place?
Well, you know, there's always been a problem. We've always had too many honeybees. I keep hearing that.
No.